Thank you guys so much for tuning in for our part two BFI Flair episode and for our final episode of season one as well, which is very exciting.
Oh my God. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know. Crazy.
We've had the privilege to see some amazing screenings as part of the BFI Festival.
And Festival.
Today we have two really exciting interviews. Yeah. We're going to be talking about Luna Sway, which was an incredible film featured as part of the lineup this year. We're going to be chatting to Nick Butler, who wrote and directed. It's his second feature film. And also Noah Parker and Liza Weil, who are two of the actors in this film. They did a really brilliant job, and it's a really exciting, interesting conversation with the two of them.
We were lucky to have all of them.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing it.
I
was quite lucky that I got to get to see the world premiere of Luna Sway. I did initially, I feel a bit bad for them, not in terms of like anything to do with the film, but they were literally taken off the stage from their introduction and plonked right in the audience amongst us all. And before it started rolling, I did think that might have been my idea of hell if I was them.
Really?
Yeah. Well, just because, I mean, I guess like, it's amazing for instant feedback, but then like I would just constantly be afraid that jokes wouldn't land. And but luckily enough, this film is incredibly funny. It's incredibly... watch it in the cinema when you get a chance, because it has that, creates those reactions. Like, there are bits that are a bit grim where the audience was all like, oh my God.
Squirming,
and all the laughs landed, and it was lovely to be in a little chorus of laughter, and it was like, oh, this is really nice, actually.
It's an incredible dark comedy written by Nick Butler himself. I think he said he wrote it straight away, straight after his other film, and it only took a few days. Do you say it was a week or something for him to write, come up with the script for this one?
In his Q&A, actually, he phrased it really interestingly. He was like, I'm quite monogamous when it comes to the films, which, considering what the film is, which is just
quite funny,
bisexual chaos.
Yeah.
He's like, after I finished my first film, I then took a break, and then wrote this one in a week.
Yeah.
This film, tonally, I absolutely adored. Yeah. I thought it was like a really sort of almost like Twin Peaks, but not really. But also he mentions Paris, Texas.
Which is my favourite film.
And
one of them.
Has that like mysticism to it that you're not quite sure what it is. And he talks about how he wanted this world to feel really sort of... you know, a little pocket of madness, I think.
Yeah.
I love that we get the chance to interview different filmmakers and learn about different people's journey with their projects. Mm-hmm. And it's I think everybody will agree with this after listening to the interview as well. Mm-hmm. He is such a fascinating filmmaker.
Yes.
And he's also so inspirational, and he's so... it's just like that turnaround is like insane in my brain. And he wrote, within a week, he wrote something that is fantastic.
It's amazing.
And he also, they shot it in 20 days.
Yeah. 20 days.
Yeah. So it's a really whirlwind of a project for something so that is so big, really magnificent.
And it means so much to him, to the cast, to the people watching it. I think that's a fantastic thing about the Flair is it really like highlights these projects that mean the world to the filmmakers and really like gives them to a community that will like, you know, be there with open arms to welcome it. And it's just,
I feel like queer identity was explored in quite a lot of the screenings that I'd seen as part of the Flair. But what I really enjoyed about this one was it was quite unconventional, some of the storytelling aspects he used to push the story forward. I really loved the surrealistic moments we've woven within that, and the sort of escapism it provided Cliff, our main character, whose journey we follow, played by Noah Parker, who we'll be speaking to. I really enjoyed that. It just took me really inside his world, inside his head, which I think really gave me an even deeper aspect into the role he was playing.
I also really loved it was, as it's, you know, an LGBT first of all, I loved that it was a film so centered in bisexuality.
Yeah.
And it wasn't ever a point of question, or it was just something that was there. And I think bisexual representation for a lot of people can be misrepresented, mm-hmm. Especially in, I think, a lot of mainstream mm-hmm. TV. And I just, I thought it was just really well done, and not even, it didn't feel like it was anything but these are the two characters that he has romantic relationships with.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even say they're overly romantic, but the relationships he has with them. But sort of a like weird, mystical Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah.
You know, chaotic, but also incredibly funny film. And I sort of can't wait to see what Nick does next, really.
Yeah. But absolutely.
It was very
unconventional. I'm following him on like everything now, and I've got like notifications for his IMDb. I'm like, hello, what are we doing next?
So,
I think we can head into the interviews then. And if, you know, if you get the chance, please, please, please do check out Luna Swain.
Yeah. Enjoy. Hi, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I actually was at the world premiere on Sunday, and it was just such a fun room to be in. And yeah, it was just such an amazing film. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Just, I guess, something I picked up on from the little Q&A at the end was you talked about how this film was kind of a little bit about unrequited love. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a theme that's not really done a lot in film. And it really sort of hit home with me when you said that, especially kind of there's a bit of a reveal at the end with one of the characters and sort of processing that. I don't know. I wanted to ask you a bit more about that and how you found making that choice.
Sure. Yeah, I was kind of in an unrequited love situation when I wrote it. And I was thinking a lot about looking for love in all the wrong places, and, which is something I've done before. And I was drawn to telling a story about a character who was, looking for love in all the wrong places and kind of struggling with how to maybe find a bit more independence from that. Mm-hmm. And there's the scene you're talking about, without spoiling it, there's a reveal at the end about one of the characters. It's a bit of a surprise, but it kind of captures, I think, the feeling of abandonment when your worst fear is the person that you're obsessed with and pining after barely knows you exist and you don't really register in the same way. And there's something very comical and embarrassing and kind of absurd about that state of being when you're caught in your feelings and it's very irrational.
Yeah.
And I think that state of mind really influenced the whole movie, because the movie has a lot of, it's melancholy, but it's also humorous and it's kind of absurd at the same time. And so I think all of that chaotic, contradicting emotions just stems from what it feels like to be in that state of unrequited love.
Wow. Yeah, I know we're touching on the sort of escapism and the surrealism a bit later, but we were just like, that was such an interesting choice to like have that kind of escapism element. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you have background in casting and you were a casting director on loads of film and TV projects. What was it like? How did it differ this time around, sort of casting something that's yours and your own? And like, did that background sort of carry into your choices now, or was it kind of a fresh eye on casting to kind of do something for that, something that you know that's yours and you're carrying it through to the end?
Yeah, it's funny. I work in casting as kind of my day job, and it is so different casting my own work versus other people's, because when you've written the character and you're so intimately involved, it just feels very different. Whereas when I'm, as a casting director, I'm always trying to get in the mind of the director. What do they want to see? It's not my, what would I cast is what they would cast. So I actually love casting my own movies. It's very liberating in a way.
Yeah.
And it feels a bit like, oh, finally I can do my own movies. Like maybe that's, and it's funny. I started making short films, like writing, directing short films. Then I just kind of stumbled into casting by accident. And But now that I make my own features, it's really, I've learned a lot through casting. Like, it's been really valuable to see how other directors work, what to do, what not to do. Like, some of the things that aren't as effective in terms of, you know, I've worked with some people who are kind of alienate the casting department because they're maybe too aggressive or they're not very friendly. And that can, so I just see the different communication styles and what works and what doesn't. And that's very valuable. I've also seen directors who are so good at communicating and what they want. And so it's been really helpful to segue from casting into directing features, because I just learned a lot from watching other directors.
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess, pigeonholing off learning from directors. Again, at the Q&A, a lot of things that were mentioned were things like Paris, Texas, the opening shot, and then sort of David Lynch a little bit. Mm-hmm. One thing that really hit home with us was there is so many sort of surrealist elements in the film with the dream sequences and also just like the general mysticism of this sort of bottle mm-hmm. town that you talked about, the timelessness and how it's kind of very individual in its aesthetic, but also in terms of how it people experience things. So the dreams and everything, I just wanted to ask a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie that's laced with a lot of surrealism and kind of magic imagery, I guess. And I think that stemmed partly from just the fact that this is a movie that deals with con artists, it deals with liars. Yeah. The main character never knows quite what to believe. The rug's always being pulled out from under him. So I felt like that gave us permission to make a movie that was a little stylized, dialed up, mm-hmm. leans into the artificial aspects of the story, be very fictitious. That was always kind of part and parcel with the concept. Mm-hmm. Also, I think I, in general, am just drawn to movies that are not hyper-naturalistic. I know it's very trendy to have like handheld camera and make it feel like a documentary in it.
Yeah.
That never excites me as much as movies that are a bit impressionistic. I just think that, you know, when you're trying to articulate what something feels like in everyday life, it allows you to see with fresh eyes when it's a little bit impressionistic.
Yeah.
And as an audience member, I get excited about that and I really appreciate that. So I love doing that in my own work. It's a lot more fun. If you're going to go to the trouble of making up an imaginary world, why make it look exactly like the one we're already in? So it's
But
it stemmed definitely from the characters and their experiences. And it's like, you know, I don't think you can, you have to be able to justify it, but I'll reach for anything I can to justify making the movie a little bit surrealistic. It's a little more fun that way.
Yeah, I love that like feeling at the start of kind of like the longing for something different, longing for change, but then it kind of leading astray and perhaps not even being quite what you anticipated. And I really also, we were talking about like the color grading and the neon and contrasting with like the background of the background of where he's from. It was just really lovely, I don't know, juxtaposition to have that sort of like that. Light in his life and then having that sort of like sort of desaturated like loneliness at the beginning. Talking about having like fresh eyes, obviously you had the world premiere recently at the BFI Flare, and even just having it being seen in London, what was it like kind of seeing the audience reaction of that scale for the first time in person? Was there any like beats that surprised you that they picked up on, that they loved or had a reaction for? Was there anything that surprised you with that?
Oh yeah, quite a few. Well, first of all, it's always so nerve-wracking to watch the movie for the first time.
Oh, I bet.
I felt so bad for you guys because I didn't realize you were going to be sat with us. I was like, I couldn't think of anything worse as someone just being sat. I was like, wow.
Yeah, we love to torture ourselves by sitting right there in the audience with everyone knowing that we're listening, but it's so actually valuable and interesting to hear the audience reaction.
Yeah.
So we kind of loved the opportunity to do that, especially at BFI Flare, where it's just like, you know, such a great smart audience to kind of bounce the movie off of. And we were all so thrilled and happy with the response. It got a lot of big laughs throughout, which was really gratifying. You never know when with a movie with the humor is quite dry and there's a lot of different tonal shifts. And I was worried about how much the humor would land. And we were all really happy with the response to the laughter. And I would say the biggest surprise is there was a couple of big laughs that we didn't think were going to land that hard. And it made me so happy to know. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Like, there's quite a few throughout. Like there's a great line when Douglas Smith, who plays one of Cliff's love interests, who's like a dentist, and he says, he turns to him and says, "Have you ever been properly sunk to by someone who really means it?" It's kind of this offbeat, quirky line, but I always thought it was funny, but I didn't know if it would get a reaction, but both of our screenings, I got one of the biggest laughs of the night.
Yeah.
And also the therapist, Cliff has like a therapist, there's a kind of a subplot with this there. And that actor, Andy Yu, who's out of Vancouver, is so funny and dry and talented, but it's very deadpan and it got big laughs. So I was really happy that the audience was connecting with those moments and finding the humor. So
experiencing it in the cinema, I was so, it's one of the films I've watched where I was like, wow, this is consistent big reactions to this. And I was like, this is so fun just watching it and then also being a part of enjoying it with other people. I was just, it's also, I just think that's what I love about the cinema, is you get those vocal reactions. Like there's a scene at the beginning that it's a little bit gross and everyone was just like, oh my God. And you can just hear that collective response, I think is so valuable just as a person, I think.
Yeah. And I feel like towing the line between it being like a dark comedy was so interesting. I'd love to ask a bit more, like those, especially those like comedy moments, was much of that sort of, because a lot of these characters are incredibly bold and, you know, as a myself as a performing background, I'm always interested in like the storytellers and those sort of moments of gold dust. Were they were many of those lines or moments sort of improvised, or were they like in the final draft of the script from the get-go?
Unfortunately for the cast, I'm very anti-improv.
Okay, interesting.
I call it on-the-fly rewrites. I'm not down for that. I'm a big fan of workshopping the script like crazy, and then when it's locked, it's locked. Obviously, there's some room for if, you know, something comes up spontaneously on the day and it's really exciting, we'll go with it. But that's pretty rare. I actually think it's important for the actors, for the performance, to have the structure of, okay, you can bring whatever you want to it, but the challenge is you have to say these words the way they are. And then it's like, how are you going to bring that to life? Mm-hmm. But obviously, if an actor had an issue with something, oh, my character wouldn't say that, or then I would have that conversation. But our cast was incredibly good at just like selling whatever line we gave them. But I'm very anti-improv, I have to say. I used to feel like pressure to be kind of a cool chill about it and be like, yeah, you can improv. But now I've come to a place where I just don't. I just know myself that I don't like that. And I just say that. But yeah.
Oh, so and you said earlier that it was shot over 20 days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was that process like? And one thing that really stood out to me, and we're speaking with Noah and Liza in a bit, but their sort of dynamic between the two of them, especially shooting something within such a short space of time. Mm-hmm. Did you allow or did you have much time for rehearsals or getting to know each other and building that dynamic? Or was it something that was just quite off the cuff?
Yeah, unfortunately, we had no time for a rehearsal. Part of it is a budgetary thing, because every time you bring the actors in for, you know, time, it's more pay. And I think our actors are all so game and they would have loved as much prep as possible, but it just wasn't possible financially. And everyone lives in different cities, different countries. So getting everyone together is a challenge.
Yeah.
So I always just try to use that to our advantage and lean into, okay, it's spontaneous. This is the first time the characters are meeting, the first time the characters are saying these things to each other. So let's just lean into the spontaneity. And thankfully, with a cast of this experience, they can just kind of roll with the punches. Like, I would say Liza and Noah, all of them, but they're all just like, take one was amazing. I was never in a position where I was like, oh boy, we're going to have to really work to get to a good take. It was like, take one was great. So then it's like, okay, great. Now we can play, try variations. And so working with such experienced, talented actors made that possible. But it's funny you should say that, because we've all become really close friends since the shoot and we're all in touch all the time, which I'm so lucky and grateful for, because it's like the fun of the shoot kind of lives on in that little way. But but I do think we all feel, and it'd be interesting to hear what Noah and Liza say about this, but I feel like we all think, darn, if only we'd broken the ice more before the shoot or knew each other better, because now we know each other so well. It's like, I want to work with them again, and I think next time we work together, it'll be a lot easier. We'll have those shorthands. We'll know how to communicate.
Yeah.
And as a director, I find it's one of the things I struggle with or challenge. I find so challenging is trying to get to know the actors quickly enough to tap in, and because there is so little time. And by the time you start to get to know them, the shoot's over. So that is a challenge. But obviously, with these actors, you know, they still pulled off the right performances. So.
Yeah.
What I did like as well, you talked about how in the small town for some of the cons, you brought in people who actually were from the town into that. And I don't know, I just thought that was so like fun. Like, how did that come about? What was that process like?
Well, that's also something I learned from the casting world. Like, I worked with a few casting directors who specialize in what they sometimes call street casting or whatever, where when you need someone really authentic for a small, you know, I tend to really be traditional with, I want real actors for the big parts with lots of dialogue, people who live, breathe, sleep acting. I'm not someone who can draw out a great performance out of someone who's never acted before. Mm. Not Sean Baker. You know, I know my limitations. But when it comes to smaller roles where it's more about just a vibe or an aesthetic, it's really fun to cast real people who have never acted but who maybe live that life of the character. So when we're in the small town, it just became fun. We met these really interesting people who had so much character and were just such a part of our day-to-day lives in this community. So it became fun to find parts for them. But in particular, there's a woman named Tina who runs this bar hotel that was our home base, called the Oasis Hotel in this town that we were shooting in. And we shot six in-story locations in this one building. It was this big, sprawling building with hotel, bar, all these empty rooms that we transformed. So it became like our little hub. And she was, you know, such a help throughout and such a big part of just facilitating the whole shoot. So she got a little part in the movie, and we love that she has a cameo, for example. So, yeah.
That's so fun.
It was really fun.
I love that.
Yeah, so as we're kind of predominantly a film-based podcast, we really love to leave our interviews with, like, a slice of our guest in through film. And so whatever this means to you, whether that's a film you grew up with that inspired you or shaped your career, or even something you were watching or studying during the process of this film, is there any
films that maybe you want to highlight or
Sure. Well, I mean, I love the Coen brothers. They're my favorite filmmakers, and and I feel like that's probably an influence on me. They also make movies with very larger-than-life, colorful characters. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite Coen brothers movies are Barton Fink, which is a very vibey, slightly surreal, very surrealistic movie as well. And it's set in like a very distinct hotel. It's a great movie. If people haven't seen it, they should check it out. I also love Inside Llewyn Davis, which also laces in a lot of kind of poetic, kind of, it's like a very slice of life story, but they still find a way to elevate it by bringing it into a slightly heightened state, which I love. They're so good at that. Another movie I love is Paris, Texas, which I didn't really discover until about 6 months before we shot this movie. And our look was already big. Like, I put together a visual lookbook while I was writing the screenplay. But when I saw that movie, it was like, this is so close to the kind of vibe we're going for. So it became a reference at that point. Like, I pulled a ton of stills. Our cinematographer and I watched it together. But I can't remember the last time I fell so quickly in love with the movie as that. Like, I was, from the start, I was just in love with that movie. Like, where has this movie been all my life? So that's one that was on my mind a lot when we were shooting, because it's also set in these kind of fringy desert towns. Very different vibe, very different tone, but aesthetically, there's a parallel.
Yeah, I definitely recognize that from the opening shot. I remember just thinking, Paris, Texas, the opening shot. This is that. I wrote it down in my notes. I was like, Paris, Texas, need to tell, because our co-host, it's her favorite film. So that's so cool.
For our listeners who maybe aren't at the BFI Flare this year, where can they sort of track the movement of Llewyn Sway and keep an eye on where it's heading next?
Yeah, so I have a website, cloudypicturesinc.com, and we'll be posting all the updates there. We are getting a theatrical release in the UK sometime in the spring, summer. We're getting a release in the fall in the US. So all the details of where and when you can see the movie will be on my website.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What do you need me to do?
I'm so sorry.
We don't have a clapboard, so I just go.
This is us on a budget.
It's fine.
It works.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. Obviously, recently you had the premiere, and I suppose we wanted to start with opening up the conversation with a quite broad question. But what was it like in watching the audience reaction in a space, in a room like that? And coming to London with it, did you find anything different with the London audience, maybe, that tapped into something fresh you hadn't noticed before?
It was our first audience.
Wow, yeah.
I think
all of us had only experienced the film, like, alone in a room in your weird apartment, like watching it on your computer. So it was it was very exciting to see it with a crowd. It does change the
the
experience, and it kind of, you know, it becomes like none of your business anymore, which is kind of nice. But what an exceptional crowd it was. It was a really lovely audience, and it felt like everything, they got the humor and things landed, and it was also, they felt very attentive. It felt lovely to be in that room and with them too.
It felt really good to finally see it with an audience. It's always a different experience watching, like you said, watching it alone. You can kind of get in your head a bit and kind of lose track of what the film is trying to say, because you're just too focused on certain little aspects and details that you are just like true to you, and it's like you should be able to kind of like experience it with other people and actually, you know, feel their energy, and then you understand why, you know, the film better. I feel like you understand the film better with an audience. That happened for me watching it with them, and they had some great questions too, you know, like a very intelligent, smart audience. It was awesome. I think BFI is a great place for this film to land, because they were so attentive, and they were great.
And Nick was telling us how you filmed it in about 20 days or something. So it must have been such a whirlwind process to, like, you're like locked in on something, and then you think, oh, people are going to see this now, you know, it's going out. Was there an element of that for you, or was it expected?
I don't know if I ever expect anything, and I think with you know, I mean, I think it's always lovely when you have a good experience. I think the older that I've gotten, I try to just make it about the experience, and then anything that happens after that is kind of, you just, there's so many things can happen. So it's always a miracle, I think, like when your film actually gets to be in the world. And then to have made a film with people that you really respect and enjoy being around and get to experience that all together. It's just like, yeah, all of this has been sort of extra bonus wonderful things,
but
I have no expectations anymore.
That's very healthy, probably. Yeah.
It's a good way of going. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it.
Something that stuck out to me was really that sort of question of independence versus emotional dependence. And I feel like we really saw that through Cliff, and especially with the arrival of his birth mother and what their perception of love truly was, and expectation versus reality. And yeah, there was a scene after the dinner scene, there were some quotes that really stuck out to me about your character's perceptions of love that I thought were really interesting. And your character says, "I guess I just never know if what I'm feeling is the same type of love everyone else is talking about." And Cliff says, "Sometimes when I'm really into someone, I'm like, is this the kind of love from the pop songs? Or is everyone else feeling other type of love I don't know about, like a premium version of it?" And it was just such a big question that they both kind of related to for the first time. What kind of similarities between your two characters do you think they felt with their perception of love that they clicked with instantly, and sort of why do you think it kind of from that point sort of strayed slightly further away as the film progressed?
It's a big one. I think that Marg specifically isn't a person that really is allowing herself to feel many things. I think that she has, been probably disappointed by the world and people in the world pretty profoundly. So I think she has a pretty thick armor up. And then certainly I think that there's things about Cliff that are very disarming and penetrate that solitude, I think. But it's still very scary for her. And I think there's parts of this film that kind of shifts every time that I see it, what my understanding is of that. It's an interesting thing about sort of healing too, or who's interested in healing. And I don't know what the film is saying about that, because I think so much of so many people in the world these days are afraid of doing that, or aren't really looking at stuff, or just sort of looking at it enough to fool everybody else around them that they're okay. This is getting on a weird tangent. my through line, I'm going to wrap this up. I don't know. I always just think about the symbolism of the hat, and how Marg and Cliff are different in that Marg can't hold on to a feeling that opens anything up. She has to throw it away and keep moving. And Cliff has the capability to hold on to things but still move forward and be informed by something, and can still go on, and Marg can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Cliff, he's opening himself because he's looking for something. He's looking for love, and he's looking for love in the wrong places, and he's looking for love maybe in the right places, but I think he sees something in Marg that it's kind of true and sincere, even though it's a masquerade. He still sees the sincerity through that, and he I think maybe it's the first time he's like, oh, okay, this person is, this person kind of means business. I don't know. She's real, she's putting up a front, but through that front she's still very real. And he also, I don't think you can put a finger on him, whatever he's experiencing. It's just, he's just going through life, and he's there, and he's there for it, and whatever happens, happens. And then, if it feels right, he'll go with it, and if it doesn't, he just steps away. And that's kind of cool, though, because Cliff is very, even though he doesn't have everything perfectly put together, he still kind of very, very much listens to himself and his, and yeah. So pretty broad. It's a pretty broad answer. No. But I think Cliff is pretty broad. He's just, you know, yeah.
I think it's, well, I found really interesting, especially hearing that it was a 20-day shoot, is how much your dynamic changes in the film. How was that for you guys, like navigating that? Because also, I'm assuming there wasn't much time with the shoot and everything. Was it just very playful or...
It felt very playful. It felt really fun. We didn't necessarily... Did we shoot in chronological order? I don't think we did.
No, not really.
Yeah, I was kind of off.
Like, I feel like it's just... This set felt just like a real partnership between everyone, and everyone was putting their 100% into it. And it just felt like every day was like a new little challenge, and we're just having fun with it. I don't know. It's like... The evolution is definitely there for these characters, but I feel like every day on set was just a new kind of evolution, meeting, like getting closer, bonding with the crew more, bonding with the other cast members more. And it just, I feel like it naturally fell into place, that evolution. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the time constraint was like served us in a way because... I think like inherently the relationship between them is like undefinable. It's like doesn't really fall into any category, which then sort of gives you an opportunity to sort of just like play each scene
as it is.
Yeah. And I think that does inform, it's so erratic, their relationship. So I think it does just sort of force you to just try to be present with each scene. So I think that's what we kind of, tried to do. But I do remember like there was like a whole slew of days where we were just like changing costumes
all the time.
Like it was like so intense.
Yeah.
Once we got out of the disguises, I remember we were just sort of like, woo.
Okay. Yeah.
How was it working with Nick as a director? What was your experience with him? He kind of was talking a little bit about how he was anti-improv.
Yeah.
So I was just curious, as a director, what was that experience like?
I love anti-improv directors because improv terrifies me. I don't know. I think Nick is, like, he had so much faith in this cast, I think, and he had such a clear idea of what this movie was. Mm-hmm. So he was pretty hands-off, I think.
Like,
he really just sort of sat back and let things unfold, which was... you know, really lovely. And I think, you know, sometimes it can be scary to not, you know, to just sort of be floating in a weird void. But I came to learn that, you know, him not saying anything was sort of the greatest compliment of, like, he was really getting what he needed. And yeah, but he's a very calming, he also is super just... even keeled, and there was a bunch of shit happening that we didn't know about, and it was very impressive to see him maintain like just a very zen composure.
That's amazing. I feel like when you're filming it in such a short space of time, you need that sort of fat, like, groundedness.
Mm-hmm. 100%. You do need it, and it's also I really trusted Nick, and I understood, I think, the complexity of the script and how it really has Nick's personal etiquette stamped on it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I already feel like it's he has this universe in his head, and it's so clear and it's so clear for him. So when we got on set, I feel like he really had a clear idea of what he wanted. Mm. And so him not really intervening that much for me, that was just like, okay, well, it's working for him. And I think you just got to let the, you know, the armor go down and just give him total confidence and believe that he will make exactly what he wants with it. And that's what he did, you know. It did really translate well from the script to the final product. So, Nick is great. Really great.
Yeah. And you really, like, sort of, you capture the character so brilliantly, kind of just watching it being taken along on this ride. It's just so lovely as a viewer to just like watch something that's so in a story. It was just so I don't know, like, there was so much movement, there was so much that went on, but there was such, I suppose, groundedness to it. We spoke to Nick earlier a bit about casting, but I have a performing background, so I'm always just nosy in terms of like those processes. What point did you get given the whole script and you sort of knew what it was, or was it hidden from you for a bit?
Was it from the start? I think
we got to read the whole thing.
Yeah, I think he sent the script with the audition.
I think there was NDA. There might have been
an NDA. Sign the NDA and then read the script. And I think that's really important. It's like you got to know what you're getting into, especially with a movie like that. And no, it was. I remember reading the script and be like, "Oh my god,
yeah,
I want to do this."
Yeah, we're a film-based podcast, so we love leaving our interviews with like a slice of our guests through film.
Uh-huh.
And we've just whatever that really means to you, whether it's a favorite film of yours, one that shaped your career, or even your childhood that made you pursue it.
I'll say film that I've seen recently that I really loved. Beau Travail of the Claire Denis.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a film that beautiful in my life. That's it's wonderful. So brilliantly shot. And that really stuck with me. I think I saw it like about a month ago and I keep coming back to it in my mind. And so, yeah, that's what I like to say. Beau Travail de Claire Denis is just so good. And it's a very... It's like doesn't have a lot of dialogue, but the way she shoots the human body is so beautiful. I've rarely seen that. I've rarely seen it, so I just want to say shout out to that film.
Yeah.
Cool. Harold and Maude is a big one for me, but I maybe regret saying that now because of it's not really, you know, that's a pretty extreme. It's not like Lunar Soleil at all. But yeah, that's, Ruth Gordon specifically, I think, is somebody that I just find her to be like completely herself. I think that was like maybe the first time sort of encountering a performer like that, that just, you know, I used to say to people when I first started out, when people would ask me like, what do you, whose career do you want to emanate? And I would say, Ruth Gordon, I'd be like, just wait, you know, give me till 65, man. My shit's really going to take off. And people would be horrified, you know. but yes, I love that one a great deal. All the sort of Hal Ashby movies I just think are very special. And they, you know, it's like those, they don't make them that way anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this Vicky Krieps movie that I just saw, but I don't remember the director's name. It's called More Than Ever. And do you know that movie?
It rings a bell.
Her character gets like a terminal diagnosis and she ends up sort of going to Norway. She just sort of wants to like die on her own. She like leaves her lover and it's a whole thing, but she's doing crazy shit in that movie, man. She always does. But yeah, that was like a re-education.
Nice.
Cool. Thank you.
A great recommendation.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. I was actually at the world premiere and it was so fun to be in that audience.
Film.
Just all the laughter. And I was like, I saw you guys sat there and I was like, oh no, I hope they're like, because I'd be so stressed.
Yeah.
That was me.
But, it was all the things. But. It was, thank you.
Stress, relief, everything.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Good.
Welcome back.
It's us again.
It's us again.
Jump scare.
That was amazing interviews.
Such lovely people.
Thank you so much to all of them for joining us, for giving us the opportunity to interview them.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
For taking the time to come and meet us.
Yeah.
It's lovely and we loved having you on.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It shows how much they care for that film.
Yeah.
And how much Lunar Soleil means to them. And I think, again, if you have the chance to watch it, watch it.
Then definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Link Nick's website where you can follow any updates on the film. He mentioned a spring summer UK release for it.
Yeah.
So just keep your eye out for it because I really think it's a fun audience watch. Like go with a couple friends, have a lovely time.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up this episode, we wanted to say a huge, huge thank you to the BFI covering press for this festival. Has just been honestly an honor, and getting to see these screenings has been such an incredible journey. We are just blown away. Yeah, even from those that are 2 hours long to those that are 4 minutes. Mm. It's just incredible what you can do with film.
100%. It's such an amazing array of film and representation in all regards of life, work, everything.
Yeah.
And I guess end of season one, guys.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled. We're going to come back and we're going to come back with, you know, something that we're really looking forward to. Our season two, I think, is... Season one has been very amazing and it's been close to our hearts, but I'm really excited for season two to come. We've got big plans, big dreams, and big ambitions, and we couldn't have done it without any of you.
And Transmission Roundhouse.
And Transmission Roundhouse. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.